Mark Simone on WOR.
All-Star break already? It's the All-Star break?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. Summer is going by very fast. Well, we got lots to get to today. We'll get to Trump, Putin, Mueller, the crazy liberals and their protests. We'll get to online shopping. Wait to hear the next moves they're going to make. We'll get to the thug governor, a homeless camp mayor. We'll get to all of those things coming up. We'll get to Facebook. Hey, in the World Cup, congratulations to France. They won. They are so happy in France. What, 12 dead now?
How many of they 12. Killed? At How least two.
Two dead so far.
One guy jumped into a river, broke his neck. Can you imagine that?
I don't mean to laugh, but...
Crazy.
What is it with these Europeans in soccer?
Well, it's big, but, you know, I'm not enough to jump into a river over.
Hey, here, World Series, Super Bowl, you have a parade. Maybe somebody gets drunk over there. They're jumping off buildings, killing themselves. So far, two deaths over the World Cup. But it's a big thing for France. I don't know why. What does it mean?
World Cup is big. It's it's
okay. Well, no, it's
competition big. Among countries.
And they don't have this every year, right? It's every four
every
years?
Every 4 years, yeah.
If it's so big, why don't they do it every year?
Because it's big. That's why.
See, that's the difference. Over here, anything this big, the networks, everybody would jump in. They'd make sure it got on every year. The advertiser, they'd make sure it was every year. But... they're very traditional over there. So let's get to Putin. Now, did you watch the fake news yesterday? All day long, they explain why he should not meet with Putin. They shouldn't meet with Putin. He should not sit down with Putin. And then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Every single president ever has sat down one-on-one with Putin.
Yeah.
Remember FDR and Stalin and Kennedy and Khrushchev and Reagan and Gorbachev and Obama and Putin?
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, let's be honest, Obama met with Putin one-on-one. You see how that turned things around. Everything went downhill from that moment, so he didn't set the bar too high on these meetings. Then I'm watching this sleazeball bureaucrat, Chuck Schumer. I understand Schumer. He's always got to say the opposite, otherwise the base will think he's not cranky enough. So he doesn't, I don't know if he even believes any of these things, but he's always going to say the opposite. He said, you shouldn't sit down with Putin. You shouldn't be meeting with Putin. I have him up on Twitter if you want to see him. The pictures of all the time Schumer met with Putin. Hillary met with Putin. She wasn't even president. She was always meeting with Putin. Everybody meets with Putin. So you remember there was one debate with Carly Fiorina where the topic was for 5 minutes, who knew Putin better? Who'd had more meetings with Putin?
Right.
It's a good thing to meet with Putin. You're supposed to meet with him. That doesn't mean, you give up everything. You try to get something out of him. But here's the thing. You get all these Richard Haass, Council on Foreign Relations, all these lifetime bureaucrats. Like, yo, giving you advice. This is how you handle it. This is what you do. These guys have failed every time. They've never had a successful anything with anybody. Why are they giving advice to people?
They know better.
They know better. They know the standard formula to have a good summit and get nothing accomplished. That's the idea of a good summit. Nothing happened. And there is a pattern to this stuff. First of all, do you remember when Prime Minister May met with German Chancellor, Merkel,
mm-hmm.
German Chancellor Merkel met with Putin a while back? Putin, you know, you see these pictures of him half naked with the big gun, killing a rhinoceros, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He has a dog. It's not a pit bull. It's like the most enormous, ferocious looking dog you ever see. It's the most frightening dog. So when he met with Merkel, he brought the dog to the meeting, and she was totally intimidated by the dog. She was very nervous around it. It was just to really shake her up. It was a terrible thing to do to her, but he did it. And they wondered if he would try that with Trump. But I think he thought that through. First of all, it wouldn't work with Trump. He'd just say, hey, I don't like dogs. Get the dog out of the room. He would say something.
Yeah.
But they probably taught him. He's smart. He's like Trump. They're the same thing. They look at the opponent. They figure out the weaknesses, strengths. They figure out what the person wants, what they can dangle. It's that kind of thing. So he probably figured out Trump loves flattery, loves to be flattered, flatter the hell out of him. It doesn't mean phony flattery. But just say, hey, you know that thing, you handle that really well. You really handle that well. It's amazing. You've only been in 2 years and seem to know your way around. So that kind of flattery.
Well, he's going to suck in Trump with that.
Not really, because everybody knows that's what he's going to try. So Trump's been warned about that. And listen, Trump has spent his entire life negotiating ferociously with real tough characters. You know, if you're in the New York real estate business and you need your concrete poured and you need the mob to stay away from your site and you need to deal with this union, you've been through tough negotiations.
This is a guy who kills people with radiation.
Yeah, you're right. The mob wouldn't kill anybody.
Well,
it's not something.
Not the way this guy does.
No, they would just cut you into a million pieces. Hey, Joe Pesci, put your head in a vice. And they're both pretty bad. So the point is, he's had experience with negotiations that have exactly this dynamic to them. Maybe a different scale, but the same dynamic. So it'll probably be all right. I don't know that anything will come out of this, but these crazy fake news people all day long, he shouldn't meet with him. They're also saying he should never meet with him, he shouldn't talk to him, he shouldn't have any relationship. Didn't these idiots just spend 2 years telling us that he's been meeting with him, talking to him, colluding with him? Didn't they say that he knows him very well and that he's actually been working
with
him?
That's right.
So what difference would this one meeting make? So I don't know. Every president has met with Putin. I don't know that anything happens. Now, the thing is, they say Putin is trying to influence our elections. He was trying to create divisiveness. Well, then he shouldn't meet with CNN either. That's justification to not go on CNN. So, speaking of which, Mueller had his big indictments on Friday. When was it? It was after he got off the air.
No, it was Friday, yeah.
Yeah, so remember the last time he indicted 12 Russians?
Mm-hmm.
What was that for? Oh, for phony Facebook ads.
Right.
It was 12 Russians that you'll never see. You don't even know if they're real. Three companies were named in those indictments. And so... some of them screwed up Mueller. They actually showed up in court and tried to hash this out. Turned out one of the companies indicted doesn't even exist. There is no such company. So we don't know if any of these people are real that he's indicted here. He's claiming that they were the ones that did the hacking. In the indictment, he claims to have all kinds of details that they and they did all kinds of things. They registered domains. Hey, by the way, you know they used Bitcoin to buy the services they needed and the domains they needed?
Yeah.
Yeah, good ad for that Bitcoin.
Cyber currency is growing.
Yeah, but you figure, hey, Russian military intelligence hackers, they must know how to do things. So they're using Bitcoin. That's pretty good. They use screenshots. They had, here's something you really got to worry about when you're in a computer. A hacker can do this. They can get into your computer. You know, obviously they can do stuff in your computer. But one of the things they do is put in keystroke capture, which records every keystroke you make.
But don't you have to let them in somehow? They just don't automatically get in.
Yeah, that's the hackers ask permission to go. No, you don't have to let them. They're hackers. That's what hacking is.
No. Through.
Oh, you mean make a mistake?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. It depends. In the case of John Podesta, this is the guy who ran Hillary's campaign. They sent him one of those fake phishing emails. It looked like it was coming from Gmail. Yeah. So there's a problem with your account. We need your password.
Right.
And this imbecile types his password, which is password.
Brilliant.
So, usually you got to be like over 90 to be fooled by one of those phishing emails. They look pretty good, but if you have any kind of understanding of anything, why would Gmail have a problem where they need my password? They have my password.
That's right.
So, that did that. But with the computer, they were. Now, here's the problem with the DNC. They had the worst protection on their server. They had very little protection on the server. The RNC, I'm sure these guys tried to hack the RNC too, but the RNC had state-of-the-art, incredible security on their server. One of the reasons was Donald Trump insisted on it with Reince Priebus, who was the RNC head at the time. So they had absolutely top protection on the server. DNC had practically nothing on it. In fact, there's some people now wondering, why didn't the DNC have real protection on the server? They're starting to think maybe this some kind of reason they didn't want. Maybe they wanted to
they
get
wanted
hacked.
They wanted to get hacked?
Who knows? Maybe it was part of this plot with Obama. You know, it turned out later, all those corrupt... You watch that Strzok testimony?
Mm-hmm.
You tell me that's not one weird, sleazy, corrupt
guy?
He
is a little weird.
He's
You're right.
He's a very frightening guy. So is McCabe. So is Page. All those guys, that little cabal that Comey had at the FBI. So you got to assume Comey's dirty. Because these guys are dirty as hell. So maybe, who knows, maybe they were being directed from somewhere.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, it doesn't, but they're the ones that started the whole Russia collusion nonsense, made all that up. So it looks like, I mean, if you look through the Mueller stuff here, it looks like clearly Russia was hacking away, trying to interfere. But as experts point out, they always do that. They did that in 2012, 2008, and not just with elections. They hack into every election, everything we have. Remember, we had hackers into the White House, the Pentagon. They're always hacking into everything. And it's not just political stuff. They're hacking into everything. Credit card companies. Remember the big Sony hack where all their content was? They hack into everything. By the way, we do that too. A recent study shows 81 foreign elections that the U.S. has interfered with and tampered with.
Oh, 81. We wouldn't do that.
81.
We would never do that, Mark.
I'm afraid it goes on all the time. So they wanted the president with Putin today to do what Obama did. Remember, we said to Putin, cut it out.
Cut it out, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
That worked.
That helped a lot. So here's what a guy like Trump does. Again, same thing as Putin. You figure out strengths and weaknesses. Figure out what would frighten the guy, what you can dangle in front of the guy that he wants. Main thing, two things that Putin always wants, Soviet Union to be known as the big superpower and successful economy, money. And that's all about oil. They always say Russia is just a big gas station. That's all they have. They sell oil. We're slowly becoming the biggest oil producer in the world. By 2022, we will be the biggest oil producer in the world. Now, we could speed that up and really screw up Russia's economy. So I think that's one of the things that's being used. I don't know if he's using it
as
carrot or stick. So that's the kind of stuff they're doing in there. They're talking about Syria, you know, this and that. I don't think deep down either. None of them are that worried about Syria. I mean, they'd like to settle it, but they're more concerned about U.S. and Russia and economic stuff. And one thing about, I think the European Union factors into this. I think Trump has figured out a way to make it look like I could break away from them or I could be friendlier with them. He's dangling that in front of Putin.
Well, that's what he said on CBS about the European Union being a foe.
Well, they are a foe economically. They've been cheating us and robbing us for years. First in NATO and with tariffs, they've been screwing around with us economically. But I'm sure that's deliberate. He's a real chess player. So I'm sure he's set up the fight with Europe. And that's part of the stuff he's dangling in front of Putin, you know. And I may just break away from Europe and just go with you. Or, yeah, maybe I'll just go settle that Europe thing. So that's part of the chess game that he's playing. And, boy, that Europe, when you point out they're not paying, they really get nasty about it, don't they?
Yeah.
You ever have a friend you lend some money to? Real good friend. You lend him some money, he never pays you back. Year later, he still hasn't paid you back. 2 years later, he hasn't paid back. Finally, you mention it. All of a sudden, he blows up and yells at you, and you're the guy that's wrong for mentioning. So that's Europe in this case. They don't want to pay the money. So Prime Minister May in Great Britain, in London, they had a big dinner for Donald Trump. Was that Friday night? I think it was Friday night. So she arranged to have all these heads of all the British companies come in before the dinner, do a little presentation to Donald Trump on how many jobs they brought to the U.S., how many things they've opened in the U.S. to try to show him that they are a great economic partner and they're doing a lot and we're making a fortune off them. And President Trump, after that, he said, very impressed with what they've done. He didn't realize how much they were doing for the United States. And by the way, pay your bill in NATO. And although actually, Great Britain's pretty good. U.K., very good. They're paying what they should be paying. They're one of the two or three countries, only two or three, that are actually paying what they're supposed to pay. Hey, we got lots to get to. We'll get to Elon Musk. I've come to the conclusion this guy's a total phony, this Elon Musk. He really is.
What about his electric car? That works pretty good.
It works pretty good. You know, I didn't realize...
About a space program.
Yeah, space program. What was it, $2 million a seat or something to go on his space caps? And that tunnel under America where you could take the tunnel train all the way to L.A., nobody's getting in it. After this Thailand cave, you're going to get in a tunnel that goes all the way under America. And with the cave, we'll get to that. It's an amazing story about his fight with one of the heroes of that situation. And you should also get a library card. I'll tell you why in a few moments. Check out the webpage. There's some good stuff up there. You know what Donald Trump's handshake they always say a firm handshake. This is way beyond that. He's got that down to a science. He does things during the handshake that change the whole dynamic, the whole psychology. Here's a video, shows you how he does it. I noticed Putin today must have watched the video. I think Putin checks my webpage. because he countered every move in that handshake.
Yeah, because Trump comes in from underneath, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah, but there's other things he does to get total dominance over you during the handshake, where he puts his hand, how he pulls you.
He
pulls you. But watch this. I'll show you how he did it. But I noticed Putin was ready for it and did it right back to him. And check a look at this. This is Hillary Clinton a few years ago saying how we should get rid of all illegal aliens. We've got to get rid of all of them. Listen, this Hillary believes nothing. She has no principles. Whatever way the wind is blowing, the wind was blowing that way at the time. Watch this video of her saying we've got to get rid of every illegal alien. Also, what's the biggest song of the summer? I don't know. Do we have one yet?
No, I wouldn't know.
I don't know. But watch this. Here's every song of the summer. Every summer had one big song. Here's every one of them all the way back to 1958. Here's, how many years is that?
Don't ask me.
60 years of them, I think. Cut together.
Something like that.
And it's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com. Then go over to the Mark Simone page. Or you can just go to 710WOR.com/Mark.
Mark Simone.
On the Voice of New York.
710WOR.
Well, we'll take some calls. 800-321-0710 is the number. 800-321-0710. So, if you get a library card, does anybody have a library card? Who would have a library card? I don't even know how you get a library card. I guess you go to the library. But you can do it online. But you get yourself a library card, they now have a deal where it'll get you into every museum in New York. That's a big thing, because these museums, many of them cost a fortune to get in there. So there's 33 New York City museums, cultural institutions signed up for this. You get a library card. Now, you can't just walk in and show your library card. But what you do is they have a site you can go to with the library card, culturepass.org, and then you can sign up there and get free passes to all these museums. So, you know, for all you people that claim that's your big hobby, you know, you ever ask people, what do you like to do? I like to go to museums. Maybe once a year they actually do, but there are some people that do this all the time. Library card. Of course, it means I probably have to go to a library to get one. But where is there a library? 42nd and 5th. I know there's a big one in there, but I never see anybody in there to look for books. It's always weddings, bar mitzvahs, everything being held in there. Anyway, 800-321-0710 is the number. Hey, we're talking about Peter Strzok, the FBI guy that testified Friday. God, did he look sleazy, weird, scheming. I mean, frightening a guy like this in the FBI. Michael Goodwin wrote quite a column about it. He'll be with us in a few minutes. We'll get to that coming up. Hey, department stores are closing like crazy. You know, more and more people shopping online. You know, I try not to become a total online shopper, but I got to admit, it's just better and better to shop online, even if it's clothing. You know, that's the one thing where you say, well, I got to see it. I got to try it on. You know, not really. After you do enough online shopping, you can just look at the picture. You can tell what it looks like. You know, you can tell if it's going to fit. Online shopping, Lord & Taylor closing the Fifth Avenue store. That was their biggest, their flagship, closing 10 other Lord & Taylors around here. 50 stores nationwide by the owner, Hudson Bay Company. But the close, the Lord & Taylor on Fifth Avenue, that's like a landmark of shopping. Macy's, you know, they own Bloomingdale's. They've closed 14% of their stores in the last couple of years. 14%. JCPenney closed 138 stores. I mean, this is going on and on and on. Now, they say, you know, one thing about these landlords, you know, with the skyscrapers, you know, you see when the store goes out of business and then nothing comes in there forever, and you find out the store was doing pretty well, but the rent increase was crazy, so they left, and then nobody comes in for 2 years because the landlord won't budge. And you think, what was the point of that?
The guys got to lose money, right?
Yeah, but this is the first time ever where they say the landlords are now budging. They realize this is very, very serious. Landlords are bringing down the rent as much as 18%, 20% in Midtown, Fifth Avenue, Madison Avenue. They realize there's a major, major, major shift in the things going on here.
Good.
Yeah, so they're going to have a problem. You know, and the other thing about the department stores, the one thing that kept women coming to those department stores was the first floor. You know, you go to the first floor of the department store, it's all cosmetics. And you think to yourself, that's ridiculous. The whole floor of cosmetics.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what kept everybody coming in. But now that's over with, too. You got these chains, Sephora, Blue Mercury, which is a very good. They're all over the place. And all they do is sell the cosmetics. It's cheaper. It's quicker. You don't have to go in and out of the department store. So that was the last thing keeping people in there. And now that's gone. So
what's going to be on the first floor now?
I've asked every major real estate guy in New York that question. They don't know. They don't know. Some of them said there'll be a new kind of retail coming in. And what's that? Well, we don't know, but it'll be a new kind of retail coming in. Some think other things will come in, like gyms and all that kind of stuff. They'll just be on the first floor. There are some buildings going up now that don't have any retail. I saw a building the other day in Tribeca. It was much better looking than any other building. I couldn't figure out why. And I asked the guy that built it. He said, you didn't notice, did you? I said, no, there's no retail. So all the lines of the building come right down to the ground.
Oh, nice.
You know, when you have a first floor of all different stores, it kind of jumbles up the look. So some people do that. Hey, by the way, restaurants are going to start moving to the second and third floors of buildings. It's cheaper. It's much cheaper. The rents are too crazy now for restaurants. It's screwing up their whole profit picture. They'll move to the second or third floor if they're good restaurants. You know, well-known good restaurants, people will come to them. You know, you go to the Time Warner Center, the restaurants are all on the fourth floor.
That's right.
And they're all very successful. Of course, two of them are the top-rated restaurants in New York. But then you got Porterhouse and Landmark. And
better view up there anyway.
Yeah, it's a better view. And they don't need to be on the first floor for any reason. So, I don't know. The whole thing is going to shift. You walk up and down Madison Avenue, 59th to 72nd. That is the premier shopping street of America. And almost two-thirds of the stores are empty.
Oh, boy. That's scary.
And here's a big thing. There's a big development in online shopping. They're now working on technology that will allow you to try it on online. They're starting with sunglasses. In other words, it'll have your picture. And if you click on the glasses, it'll put them on your face so you can see what they look like.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and this technology will get more and more sophisticated. You'll be able to try on all the clothes, see what they look like on you. So this is not ending, this phenomenon. When we come back, Michael Goodwin, we'll get to that crazy FBI agent, Peter Strzok, and what's going on there coming up. But first, let's get to the latest news.
Now you can catch up with what you missed from Mark Simone on demand. Catch his podcasts at 710WOR.com/Mark. Mark Simone.
On the Voice of New York.
710WOR.
Well, Michael Goodwin is the best columnist in America. Every Sunday, every Wednesday in the New York Post. In fact, yesterday's column has gone viral all over the place, even the front page of Drudge. Michael Goodwin, how you doing?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you.
Your column was about Peter Strzok, who testified on Friday, and I think, or was it Thursday? I think he was
Thursday, yeah.
Thursday. He was quite frightening. He looked so weird, diabolical, scheming, like some weird James Bond crazy villain. Is he as bad as he looks?
I think he is. And I think his defiance against this mountain of evidence that he is biased and therefore corrupt in his professional role investigating both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in 2016, to me, that Mark, that he's still on the payroll, he is in many ways, as I say in the column, a chip off the block of Comey and McCabe, both of whom were fired. And it is remarkable to me that we see in these people in the FBI this incredible arrogance, this sense that they are above the law that they impose on other people. Don't forget McCabe has been fired for lying to internal investigators about his own conduct on a media link. He's been referred for prosecution, but we haven't heard a decision yet. I mean, Martha Stewart was prosecuted and went to jail for that. Many, many other people. General Flynn has been convicted and pled guilty to lying to the FBI, is awaiting sentencing. This is the law of the land. But if you're in the FBI, somehow you're above it all. I mean, how did this happen? How did we create this kind of supreme office that is not accountable to anybody? I mean, it doesn't. Comey talked about the independence of the. What do you mean independence? You're part of the executive branch there are three branches of government. The FBI is not a fourth branch of government. I mean, these people have just inflated themselves and their importance and was struck. We saw the face of it. We saw the arrogance, the defiance, as you say, the weirdness of it all. And I'm watching this, I'm thinking, who is this guy? How did he get to be so important in the FBI? And I think the answer is Jeff Sessions, being the somnolent attorney general who has recused himself from everything and therefore responsible for nothing. You have Rod Rosenstein, who I think is just turned out to be a kind of an Inspector Javert in his own way. And then Christopher Wray, the new head of the FBI, who seems, as I say, somebody who wandered into the wrong movie theater and can't find the exit door. I mean, these are the people who are running the supposedly the most, the greatest, the best law enforcement agencies in the world. They look like Keystone Cops.
Well, you know, I know a lot of FBI guys. I'm sure you do, too. One thing I noticed about all of them, they all look like straight arrows. They all look like Boy Scouts. So where did this weird cabal come from? Can we blame Comey for putting all these people up there in charge?
Certainly I would. They're also, Mark, Comey is clearly the most, I think, important contributor to this culture. But I think it even goes beyond that in many ways. I mean, I think the FBI has always had an inflated self-importance, sense of self-importance. And you'll talk to a lot of people, a former federal judge said to me something like that famous but incompetent. And you hear a lot of that talk, even from some former agents who think that it has become increasingly in more recent years more Washington focused, that the power has been more and more centralized, and so you have less power in the bureaus and in the agents around the country. And interestingly, when McCabe became in the spotlight with his conflicts of interest and then his alleged lying and everything, a lot of people talked about how his rise was very unusual, that he was always a kind of central headquarters guy, that he had never had significant roles in the field. And so the people thought that this was a kind of bureaucratic, institutionalized approach to everything, and that it lacked the hard field work, the honest investigative work that the Bureau has prided itself on. And I think we see that in a lot of institutional cultures. There's this battle between the front line and the big corporatists who view it from 30,000 feet. But when you've got the FBI viewing itself and viewing crime from 30,000 feet, it takes on a different tenor than if it is, you know, out in the field talking, working with local police departments. Ray Kelly for years complained that the FBI would never share any of its data, any of its chatter about terrorism with the New York Police Department. That's why Kelly sent detectives from New York around the world. Rudy Giuliani, when he was mayor, was very concerned after 9/11 that the next mayor would not have the same relationship with the FBI that he had by virtue of his being a prosecutor, and so therefore would not know what the FBI knew about potential terrorist attacks. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it in the Boston Marathon bombing. The FBI examined the Tsarnaev brothers. They had a tip that they were terrorists. They concluded they weren't, but they never told the Boston police about them. They never alerted the Boston police that they had gotten this tip. So that's the kind of, I think, shoddy work that the FBI has too often been found guilty of, is not working with local law enforcement, treating local law enforcement as beneath them. That's what I think you see with Strzok. You see that with McCabe. You see that with Comey, that they are kind of floating above everything, and they are not really accountable. They can't tell you. It's top secret. They can't answer that question. On the advice of counsel, I mean, they act as though they are immune from Congress, from oversight, from the laws. This has to end. This is a terrible way for our chief law enforcement officials to view themselves and their relationship to the government itself.
Well, it's one area where President Trump is not acting. He's hands off. I think he just figures it's not the moment yet. At some point, he'll step in. You mentioned Ray Kelly. That's the kind of guy you need, a real heroic straight arrow to go in there and fix this.
Well, because, you know, I think what happened with the FBI is that it became sort of the tail wagging the dog. I mean, it's no longer interested in, you know, bank robberies. It just doesn't do ordinary crime the way it once did. And so, therefore, I think it's kind of slipped its bonds and become this super spy agency in many ways. And that is one of the ways that they exempt themselves from congressional oversight. Oh, it's classified information, right? It's secret. We can't tell you. So they come there, and I think Comey in particular created this relationship with Congress where some Senate staffer said, you know, we joked that he was Senator Comey, that he came here, he was treated as one of us. You know, it may go back to the Hoover years, right? They were all afraid that they had the dirt on them, right? Every member of Congress is afraid to question J. Edgar Hoover because he might have had a file on you about your mistress or your bank accounts or something you said when you were 10 years old.
I'll take Hoover over these guys, actually.
Well, in many ways, yes, because I think Hoover was a true believer in the anti-communism and that sort of thing. These guys seem only to believe in their own, unaccountable powers. They seem obsessed with being above everybody else's reproach. That is terrifying for law enforcement.
Yeah, well, it's a great column, powerful column. If you missed it, get Michael Goodwin's column yesterday. It's gone viral all over the place. You can go to the New York Post and get it. His column is every Sunday, every Wednesday in the New York Post. Michael Goodwin, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Take care. Oh, and everybody, check out our webpage today. A lot of good stuff up there. Hey, watch. This is interesting. Donald Trump, it's the art of the handshake. It's not just make sure you have a firm handshake. There's all kinds of things he does during the handshake to change the dynamic of a meeting. Watch this. It'll show you what he does. And then take a look at this. This is Hillary Clinton a few years ago. Now, she doesn't believe in anything, Hillary Clinton. She's just a weather vane. Whatever way the wind is blowing. So in 2003, she was against all illegal aliens. Watch her talking about how we must get rid of every illegal alien. And every summer has had one big song. Here's all of them for the last 60 years, back to 1958. Every number one summer song cut together. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com/mark. 710WOR.com/mark.